Hello and welcome back to Unseen Incidents. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on this week's episodes, we're talking about Tottenham Hotspur. Is relegation truly on the cards? What would it mean for Spurs, and how could they prepare for life in the Championship? Then we open up the burn book. While over on the paid side, we are answering a bunch of your questions, including how Premier League rules could change next season, how Championship teams should prepare for life in the Prem, and I don't know, some other stuff. That's all on this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. Man, I was just scrolling through the questions as I was doing that, and I was like, I don't know, there's a bunch of other shit here. Like, I guess I should have said, oh, which of these teams, if they played each other in their prime, would win? Man United in their treble era, was that an era? Arsenal in their Invincibles era, again, era, question mark. You know, all this fucking nonsense. I just don't care about that kind of shit, you know?
I specifically chose that one out of the pile because I knew you'd hate it.
All right, well, I'll leave it. It's not that I hate it. It's just that, like, my honest take on it, nobody wants to hear. Like, you say something where you're like, yeah, I think that teams now are much more sophisticated than teams were 18 years ago. Like, Man United that won in 2008. No, I'm like, yeah, that's 18 years ago.
The treble winning is 27 years ago.
Yeah, and you're just like, yeah, I think that modern teams would beat the shit out of those teams.
But I guess it becomes, if you do it relatively speaking, so you
can't do it relatively speaking.
That. You can do it a little bit.
You can't.
Weighted against the era that they were in.
Not really.
I agree it's difficult.
We'll save this for later. We're going to get into this on the paid side.
This is the good juicy stuff for the paid side.
We'll get into that on the paid side. How are you, Pete? We're going to talk about Spurs here. Yeah. So look, I think this is very funny. Like it's slightly stressful, but so the other day I went to last week. I had a few days off. I took a midweek off so that Emma and I could spend our anniversary together. She was out working.
Happy anniversary. Nine
years. She was not working that night, but she was at a book event that night. And so it was like, okay, we're going to spend the day together. And I wasn't on the transfer flow midweek last week. So I was like, right, okay, I got a good few days. And then I went away to a hotel on Thursday because I was like, I'm fucking tired. So I went to cinema for like 2 days running. I went to a spa in the hotel. And then I was like, room service, hotel, chill. And then I thought, I'm going to watch a film.
Is this on your own, by the way?
This is on my own.
I respect this move a lot.
So I was like swimming in the evening in the spa, swimming in the morning in the spa. But like, I planned to watch a film as well in my hotel room in the evening. And then I was like, you know, I've seen a film today. I'd watch like a 3-hour movie in the cinema. So I was like, debating what to watch. And then I thought, oh, I'll just check on the Spurs score because I know that Spurs are playing tonight. Oh, it's half time and Spurs are losing 3-1 and they've had someone sent off. And I went, oh no. And then I thought, I have to check in. And I opened up Twitter and truly the first few messages I saw were like, oh my God, it's really happening. Oh my God, yeah. It's going to happen. And I thought, you know
the
what?
The Michael Scott meme.
Yeah. And I thought, I don't even... As I've said many times, I don't really hate Spurs that much. I find them annoying. I find their fans annoying. You know, them saying, calling themselves champions of Europe when they won like the second tier competition. Yeah, maybe next year when they win the championship, they'll say they're champions of England. You know, then they could be like, we're champions of England. We won the championship.
Best it's
like,
yeah, sure. In England.
Yeah, exactly. But that kind of stuff is annoying. But all football fans are annoying. I find Arsenal fans annoying. Man, watching a club of this magnitude. You get itself into this situation. And now, I was doing Champions League preview with Ted on Monday, and we were talking about Atleti versus Spurs, and we were just both like Ted from the point of view of a better, me from the point of view of just talking about the teams. We were like, how do you handicap this game? Like, Atleti are not that great. Spurs are not that great. But on the other hand, like, we have literally no idea whether what we know Spurs to be is going to be representative of those fixtures because Spurs have got Atleti away in the Champions League. Then at the weekend, they go away to Anfield. Then next week, they host Atletico Madrid. And 4 days after that, what game do they have? They have the early kickoff with Nottingham Forest, direct relegation rivals, coming to whatever their stadium is called. You know, New White Hart Lane. I don't give a fuck. Like,
It's literally just the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah, it is. But I was just like, is it called the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium or is it called
unless it's recently? No, it's definitely not New White Hart Lane.
I just think Tottenham Hotspur Stadium though is like pro Evo shit.
It feels like he may as well just sell. Maybe they plan to sell the like stadium naming rights, but nobody wanted it.
That probably is true. In pro Evo it would be called like the London White.
London Whites, yeah.
Actually, no. London White Stadium is Stamford Bridge.
Oh, sure.
I'm glad that we went for the same joke, but different angles. So I was just like, I was looking at the fans there, and I remember a couple of years ago, there was a really bad Arsenal start to the season, and Arsenal were kind of like, not in the relegation zone, but were pretty low down. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is actually scary. And then, like, Spurs are in this situation where they're way more injured than Forest or West Ham.
Than anybody in the league.
West Ham have the toughest schedule. We'll talk about this. I know we'll talk about all this in more detail. But West Ham are kind of looking up quality-wise. Yeah. Spurs do not have reinforcements coming anytime soon. Like, so many of their players are just out. And maybe some will come back next month. And maybe some will come back the month after. And then it's the end of the season. But, like, we're not going to see Maddison this year. Kulusevski, are we going to see him this year? Kudus, we should see next month. Like, they've had basically, as we talked about in a previous episode, so many injuries. Like, we have talked about Spurs a bit, obviously. But here, the situation has got so much more serious since then. And they could easily, I mean, I expect them to lose away to Liverpool. Like, sure. Come on. But even if they drew away at Liverpool, if they don't beat Forest,
yeah,
it is a scary situation. So what we're going to talk about today, a bit about like the probability of them being relegated. We'll talk about the state of the squad. And what they would do if they got relegated, how it would affect them financially and how they could rebuild the squad, because they really would have to. So right now, two places in the relegation zone are basically locked. You know, like Wolves have started winning games, but Wolves are down. Yeah. Burnley are down. And so then there's a last spot, which is West Ham, Forest and Spurs. Spurs have the best goal difference and also they've got 1 point more than West Ham, but they're level with Forest. And more importantly, you look at them at the moment, and I realise that everybody just wants to say this. They're like, oh, Spurs are going down right now. But I mean, like, have you watched Forest recently? Mm. But you do look at Forest going away to Man City and kind of getting a result against the odds, where they kind of got, they obviously should have lost that game. But Tottenham do look pretty lost.
As
I was talking about them on Monday, you know, there's a load of this bullshit of people like Joe Cole coming out and being like, there's no desire. They don't want to win. Like that's not true at all. I watched the second half of that Palace game and I thought there's actually a lot of desire here, but it's like kamikaze now because they're so desperate, because it's not just a clearance, right? It's, are we going to get relegated? And the reason Van de Ven doesn't just let Palace get a shot on goal, the reason he pulls someone back and gets a red card, it's because he thinks, oh God, we're going to get relegated.
It's happening, yeah.
He's too hyped up. And so Spurs are now in the situation where every single kick of the ball is terrifying to them. They are a team and a manager who have absolutely zero experience in this situation.
Missing a ton of players, thin squad, still in the Champions League. Terrible scenario.
Van de Ven now banned.
Yes, good point.
You know, like, It's a scary thing. So do you want to run through a little bit about the situation right now? We'll talk about kind of their odds of getting relegated, I suppose, loosely. We'll talk about, you know, how the other teams are doing. And then maybe we can get into the question of what if.
Yeah. So we obviously spoke about Spurs, I don't know, feels like a month and a half ago. And yeah, they were in a similar position in the table. But we kind of pumped the brakes on how bad it was at Spurs. And it was like, you know what, they'll likely just get out of the season fine. And, you know, within four or five games, there'll be a little bit of a gap that starts to form and they'll get a cushion. And by the, you know, last 4 weeks of the season, they'll be like, you know what, it's actually all right. Let's just write the season off and rebuild in the summer and start again, still as a Premier League team.
Sure.
In that period, though, it's gotten significantly worse for Spurs. They lost all of their last five league games. They've now gone 11 winless in the league, which is the first time, I think, since sometime in the 1970s.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Their last win in the league, December 2025.
That's
end of December 2025 was their last win in the league. We are recording this on Tuesday the 10th of March. This is a club in the last 16. Currently playing this evening in the last 16 of the Champions League, haven't won in the Premier League since the 28th of December 2025. If you go even further back than that, of their last 20 league games, do you know how many they've won?
Last 20?
Of their last 20 league games.
I'm going to guess like 3.
They've won 2.
Oh my God.
They've taken 12 of a total of 60 points across that period. 0.6 points per game. So maybe we were a little bit foolish.
Yeah, so they've got... Do you know what their home record is in the Premier League this season?
I think they've won twice.
They've played 15. They've won twice.
Yeah.
They've got 10 points from an available 45 at home. They've got a minus 4 expected goal difference at home.
The London White Stadium is not a fortress.
No. So they're actually, I mean, weirdly enough, they're like mid-table away from home. But their underlying numbers are significantly worse away from home. Then again, Man City's numbers away from home are pretty bad, I must say. They're worse than Liverpool, they're worse than Chelsea. Just a heads up. And City have got 5 away games to finish the season. Yeah, so I mean, I've got to say, 2 of their last 20 is actually astonishing.
They 0 point across 20 games in the Premier League. So the last game week is what? Game week 29. So from game week 9 to 29, or 10 to 29, they have won 2 games and they've taken 0.6 points per game on average.
They definitely should have kept Frank, right?
I mean, at this stage, it couldn't be any worse. Like,
I'm not defending Frank's performance in that job, but like, I do think that Frank's style of football would fit this situation, right? Like, it would arguably fit this situation better than trying to get top 6. If Frank was like, holy shit, we need to not get relegated, we're going to play like 4-4 fucking 2 and we're just like going to sit here and kick the shit out of people, which is the one thing that that squad is equipped to do, that would probably be better than Igor Tudor being like, hey guys, I've got this idea. João Palhinha, centre back. What do you guys think? Hate it, Igor. Worst idea I've ever heard.
Because I think part of the criticism we had with, well, not criticism, but reservation we had about Frank being sacked, we were saying, okay, if Frank's gone, who are you getting? Like, who's saving this season? And I guess Tudor has a history of kind of firefighting and saving clubs. He did it at Verona. He did it somewhere else. Udinese, 2018.
He hasn't spent much time in relegation battles.
Yeah, but he's...
By the way, he's
turned tides.
Can I just go back to the home record thing?
Sorry, yeah, go.
Just to go back to the home record thing. Forest and West Ham have more points at home than Spurs and have played one fewer game at home. Burnley have the same points as Spurs at home. They've got 10 points at home, but they've got a game in hand. So Spurs could actually end up with the worst home record in the league. And by the way... It was not that long. Well, it was that long ago. It was like 10 years ago. But there was a season under Pochettino when Spurs, I think they won 18 and drew 1 of their home games one season. Mm-hmm. It was their last season, I think, at the old White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
It was a true fortress. It was the toughest place to go in the Premier League. It was actually tougher than City or Anfield at the time. And now, no matter what happens in their last few games, they'll have lost. They'll have lost almost half of their home games. Like, actually, if they lose one more game, then they'll have lost more than half of their home games by the end of the season.
So come what may.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm actually baffled by it. It's amazing.
This is why I think we were perhaps too slightly naive in being quite as bullish as we were in how bad the situation was, or trying to, we played it down a lot the last time we spoke about this a month or so ago, because this trend has not just existed recently, it's existed for the entire season. And the question you need to ask yourself, or we need to ask ourselves, I guess, is what changes to save them? Other than obviously, you know, they are in the
question.
They're in the best position of the three in terms of they have the joint most points and the best goal difference. So if you count goal difference as half a point, they have the best points tally of those three teams. But that's kind of where their positives end. They are in the worst form. Tudor's come in as this firefighting manager who has arguably made them worse. They've lost all 3 games. He's already been rumoured that they're looking at alternatives to, you know, get rid of him immediately.
He keeps saying absolutely terrible things as well. Like he's got zero ability to he's like not a leader of men.
No.
He's just like, they played Arsenal, he was like, yeah, we fucking suck. Arsenal way better than us. Like, after every game he comes out and he's like, yeah, I mean, like, this is probably the worst team I've ever seen play in my... He sounds like Antonio Conte did after 6 months, when Antonio Conte was like,
just didn't give a fuck anymore.
He said this, he was like, this club is trying to turn me, one of the game's greatest winners, into a fucking loser.
Yeah.
Like, I despise being here. I'm only here because I literally have an addiction to being a football manager.
He also came out and said something like, this is the toughest job of his career or whatever, like the toughest task that he's ever had in his career. In a team that is literally, like you say, terrified to basically touch the ball individually at any point in the moment. There was an article about somebody who got relegated in the team the last Spurs team that got relegated. And he said that in that instance, when they were circling the drain and in the kind of relegation battle, like in the last four or five games, every mistake you made him feel like genuinely sick, like he was about to vomit. Like, that's how much the pressure had built up. And
sick.
That
sounds
is...
Sounds good.
That is, you can see that in the Palace game. That is rife throughout the squad. And he's coming out and literally just adding fuel to the fire in all of these comments. And if you look at Spurs, if you take the table from when he took over Spurs, it does not make for very good reading for Spurs. They've lost all three games. They lost all of those games on XG. Only one of those games, they had over one XG. We're dealing with understat numbers here, but it's all we've got.
Is that the Palace one?
Yeah, the Palace one, they had 1.3. Or 1.2 XG.
Sick.
They're the only team in the league to have not taken a point in the last three games. West Ham have taken four in that period. Forest have taken one. They've got the worst expected points in the league since Tudor started. Worst expected goals against. Second worst expected goals. And most opposition's deep completions allowed. So,
and they've kind of got lucky as well. Because, like, West
in what
Ham...
sense?
If West Ham had beaten United, for example, which was totally on the cards.
I mean, Cesco's goal, like, we said that when it happened, we were like, this could have been worse. We said that was a saving grace for Spurs.
And then if that had gone in, then West Ham would be a point above Spurs right now. Forest would be in the relegation zone on goal difference.
Yeah, and they play each other in 2 weeks.
That's where we'd be. It's crazy. And actually, West Ham, I think, probably deserve more against Liverpool as well. Like, you just look at West Ham at the moment. Okay, West Ham have got Man City this weekend. But, as I said before, Man City, not good on the road. Man City have the fourth best expected goal difference per 90 on the road. And Man City are playing Real Madrid away tomorrow. And then they have to go to West Ham away. Now, I still expect Man City to get that result. But given the way West Ham are playing at the moment, it would not be surprising for them to
especially
get a point.
Bigger teams as well.
And if they get a point in that game and Spurs lose to Liverpool, these teams are level. And the goal difference could close really, really quickly as well if Spurs take one more big beating. That's where we are, man. Like, it's truly, we are a result away from disaster for Spurs. And if they lose that Forest game...
Yeah, that's even before the Forest game.
If they lose that Forest game, I don't know if there's a way to pull out of this nosedive.
The Forest game, so... Forest at White Hart Lane. London White
just
Stadium.
Just call it White Lane. Who gives a shit?
London White Stadium. Forest Spurs game. At least one team's guaranteed to drop points there, if not both if they draw. But whoever loses that game, if the result goes that way, that's basically defining who's scrapping with West Ham, who are on the up for that last spot. I think whoever wins that game, because that is the only 6-pointer here. That's the only time any of these three teams meet each other in the next 9 games. So that's the only true 6-pointer. That could well be enough to separate 16th from 17th and 18th.
But Tottenham's schedule, though, like, let's just have a quick look at that, because I've been thinking this whole time, like, West Ham have the worst schedule. And to be fair, they do.
They have the third hardest schedule
of anybody. They've got a host, like, of their home games. Their home games, which should be easier to win, include City and Arsenal. They've got to go away to Villa. They've got to go away to Brentford. They've got to away to Newcastle. Like, these are tough games. But Spurs, I do look at their list and I think, if you're trying to get wins, I don't like it. Like, Liverpool away, no thank you.
No.
Forest home, 6-pointer, anything could happen. Sunderland away. How many people have won away at Sunderland this season? Like, Sunderland, I think, have 27 points at home, I think, off the top of my head. I don't know for certain. But they've got one of the superior home records in the league.
Sunderland are sixth in the league for points. They're 26 points from home.
Okay. Brighton at home. Okay, that's one of your easier fixtures because Wolves away. How many people are beating Wolves away at the moment? Villa away. Leeds. So Leeds home, Everton home, and Brighton home are your easiest fixtures, I would say here.
You know, but also, this is a team that's taken 10 points at home. they're the joint worst.
Exactly. And so you're like, so then you think, okay, well, maybe Wolves away. Oh, wait. Wolves away is not an easy game. And more importantly, I think quite often the teams that win those games against, you know, like those tough defensive teams away from home are the teams that are happy with a point. If you go away to Sunderland and you're happy with a point, Sunderland have to come out and play you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're City and Arsenal and Liverpool and you go there, then they're happy to bunker and play their game. And Spurs are now in this position where they've got to go away. Teams know they've got to go and try and get wins.
Yeah.
So Spurs would like to hope that some of these teams are on the deck chairs by the end of the season. And, you know, like Wolves by that point might be like, you know what? We got some results. We saved our pride, but like, fuck it. But then Villa are going to be playing for something and Chelsea are going to be playing for something at the end of the season. So it's going to be Leeds and Everton, those two home games at the end. That's where we are. On the other hand, from just a mathematical point of view, like they're on 29 points. If you get four wins, you are basically safe. It would be almost unprecedented.
Yeah, but they've also got seven wins all season.
I know.
29 games.
I know. But all I'm saying is that sometimes when we're talking about it as a race, it's easy to lose track of the fact that kind of 41, 42 points does pretty much make you safe as well. And, you know, like not all three of these teams are going to end up in that neck of the woods. I don't think it's possible, but I think at least one of them will just kind of, the wheels will come off. Forest, I think, are the worst of these teams, at least right now.
Mm.
But they've got the easiest schedule. In my opinion, I think their schedule is easier than Spurs.
So like theirs and Spurs are very close. West Ham's is considerably more difficult.
Yeah.
I think Spurs and Forest's run in is comparable in difficulty. I think you could flip either way on what you feel is more difficult for those two, but there's a stretch to them West Ham schedule, which is more difficult.
But then you look at the injury record. Let's just do that and then let's get into the thing about, you know, what
happened, what if, yeah.
But you look at the injury record and you're like, okay, Wilson-Odobert, see ya, out till November. James Maddison will never be seen again. Kulusevski, May. Bentancur, May. Kudus, mid-April. Davies, mid-April. Bergvall, mid-April. Udogi could be back at the end of this week, I think. But
yeah.
I'll be shocked, and I'll be shocked if he comes back fighting fit because he's come back from a hamstring injury. So
there's going to be another couple of weeks there for fitness minimum.
So the squad that they're running out at the moment is the squad they have. It really is. And I don't know. I mean, I still think that their odds of relegation are still not huge because they have a goal difference and a point advantage on West Ham. Because Forest and West Ham have worse numbers than them over the course of the season. Like the team of these with the strongest numbers season long is Spurs. The team with the strongest numbers the last couple of months is West Ham.
Yeah.
But they have the hardest running. Yeah. So the odds are still against Spurs getting relegated.
But they're still pretty big for what they are.
And again, I do think that West Ham players, maybe, but Forest players certainly, can look at this situation and be like, guys, we've been here before.
Yeah.
We can do it. We've got a manager who knows how to do it. Like we're ready to scrap. Like we have a team of scrappers. And Spurs will look at it and be like, oh my fucking God.
Holy
guys.
Shit. Oh, everything, my God. Everything is burning down. Everything's on fire.
So how much money are they going to lose if they go down? Because there's debate about this. But I mean, you've got some stuff here. And then I'd really like to talk about what they could do with the squad.
So if Spurs go down, their finances would collapse by about £260 million in annual revenue if they were to go from the Premier League to the Championship.
Feels like a lot.
Which is substantial. And it's also kind of ironic for a team that's been historically very frugal with their money. The business case for Spurs has always been quite strong under like the Levy era of building, like, you know, like taking out a huge loan and building like spending a billion whatever pounds on a stadium and all of that, and then maximising revenue by using that for like NFL stuff and all of that. And like they as a business, Spurs have been run very, very well, financially speaking, and quite frugally throughout the Levy era, to now then get relegated in a season and lose, like just cut 200, quarter of a billion pounds per year. by dropping in the Champions League or the Championship is kind of crazy. But yeah, I think the knock-on effect that would have would be huge. We would see fire sales of loads of players. Loads of players would, you know, likely be eligible with certain clauses in the contract to say, you know what, if we get relegated, I can leave for X amount.
That's the intriguing thing. Like that's a bit of an X factor, right? Because if you were Xavi Simons, for example, joining last summer, or Gallagher joining mid-season, you'd look at this team that finished 17th last year and you'd say, I would like a relegation buyout clause.
Yeah.
You let me go for 25 mil or something. And those are two of the players who you, in an ideal world, would want to keep, I think. Or Simons certainly is. The one thing that would, I guess, like bring back some of those costs is that these guys will have other relegation clauses. So their wages will drop. I was talking to Ted about this on Monday, and Ted said, most players, pretty much 50% wage cut if the team gets relegated.
But even in saying that, like Madison's on 170. So half that is at 85K a week in the Championship.
Yeah, and you definitely can't move him.
As a tweak, well, he's a 29-year-old who's never fit. Who like he's one of the ones I think stays. But like that still hurts you. That's still like 85K a week in the Championship for James Maddison. He might play 25 games a season.
I think that's okay. I think that's like it's a bit of a nightmare that he's never fit.
Yeah.
But, especially with a longer season.
Yeah.
So, but everyone's going to be miserable because they're going to be earning half the money to play in the Championship. You also have to retool for a longer season because this squad was not deep enough for a Premier League season. And you've got to retool as well in such a way that you're well positioned to win in the Championship. But when you come back up to the Premier League, you can try and stay up.
Yeah.
Like it's such a difficult job to do.
And, not just stay up, like do more, isn't that? Because a team as big as Spurs won't be expecting, say if they do go down.
Yeah, like re-establish yourself mid-table.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, that was like a hiccup. A bump in the road, we went down, we yo-yoed straight back up, but now we're like 14th, 15th, or 13th, 14th nailed on, and we're going to rebuild from here. Like, we're not expected to go straight back down. They won't be happy with being like, oh, we're coming up, but who knows what's going to happen next season. Like, they'll want significantly, and expect significantly greater performance than that if and when they get back in the Premier League after potentially getting relegated.
But at least they could come up and spend. Like, if they came back up to the Premier League, they would immediately have a ton of money. I mean, the thing is, though, the squad is so badly set up for this as well. Like, there are teams in the Premier League who, if they got relegated, they'd be like, we've got a bunch of young guys, they're not that expensive. We've got a couple of older heads, but that's fine. And I look at this and I think, okay, well, if you've got old players with no resale but are still useful, then you keep hold of those guys.
Yeah.
But you look at Spurs squad and you're like, how many of those are there? Okay, Madison,
Ben Davies.
No contribution. Davies out of contract. Solanke is a guy who they could actually
keep. Yeah.
Solanke is one of the few players in the team who you say they probably don't get a big enough offer to get rid of him and he'll actually still be useful in the Championship. But on the other hand, how much would they take for him? Because if I were a middle-class Premier League team, like if you're like Villa, I mean, I know they've just got Tammy, I guess. But if you were like Villa, would you not be like, yeah, we'll give you 20 mil for Solanke?
Yeah, but you wouldn't...
He's 28.
I wouldn't take 20 mil.
But I don't know what it's like if Solanke knows that offer's on the table.
Yeah.
And if he's getting half the money. Like, I really don't know.
Yeah,
like, this is where we are. And so Spurs might just be like, we got a fucking Titan belts, man. I don't know. Like, so on the other hand, they could just get, like, honestly, win every single game in the Championship next season. But Richarlison is a guy that you could feasibly keep. He's out of contract in 2027. It looks like, I'd imagine that the big money offers have gone away from him, for him. But he's a guy who could stick around, and he probably will be absolutely lethal in the Championship. Other than that, you want to keep young players, right? Who have upside and need minutes. So, Saar. Spurs were thinking about getting rid of him, but he is totally good enough for the Championship. Bergvall would be great if you could keep him, but people will sniff around for sure. Gray, sure. Souza, sure. Tell, sure. Kinski, probably fine. Vuskovic, who's their centre-back who's been out on loan this season and has been absolutely amazing in the Bundesliga, I just think they'd have to sell him immediately, which would suck because they did a really good job getting him. So those are
the players you keep.
Well, those are if you can. Like this is the thing.
I think you can keep most of those young. You can keep most of those young players, I think, with the promise of minutes and development.
But you're really going to have to like go on a charm offensive and say to them, look, you guys stick around, they're going to be bonuses when we come back up to the Prem and blah blah blah. Like, it is just, it's such a difficult situation to deal with.
It's like it's basically backdooring them into starting roles in the Premier League, essentially, as the sale, being like, we'll give you a load of minutes in the Championship, we'll come straight back up and you will be in favour because you'll have come up with the team and you'll be part of this next generation of what Spurs will be.
And if I was someone like Sar, I'd be like,
sort of a different though, because he's 25, right? He's older. Like, a lot of those other players, like Gray's 19, Bergvall's like 20. I think Sar should stay. I think he would be great in the Championship, but I think he's slightly different.
But I'd also
the sell for him slightly different because he's a bit older.
But also, if I were him, I'd be like, weren't you trying to get rid of me? Like, weren't you thinking about getting rid of me? And now you're relegated. You want me?
I mean, bro, we're in a weaker league.
The main one who Solanke would be a great one to keep. The other one who you'd really love to keep would be Simons. But I
just don't see how you keep Simons. I just don't see it.
And like I said, I think he's guaranteed to have a relegation.
But also, even for the play devil's advocate, say he doesn't. For me, this just feels like the latest weird detour on the weird career that he's had so far. He has no affinity towards Spurs. He's just in the door. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. And we were talking about Xavi Simons to teams like United or to like Liverpool and stuff. Like, in that he would have been interesting. Why weren't they sniffing around him? Oh no, it was when he went to Leipzig for that weird 1 year after Klopp got appointed as their global head of football or whatever for the Red Bull group. I made a conspiracy theory that they were cooking the books to get him to Liverpool for cheap or something to that effect.
Sure, yeah.
But we were talking about him 18 months ago, 12 months ago, with big moves to big Premier League clubs. I just don't see how him, with zero affinity, the only way you can have a player that stays there like that for a year is if they've come through the academy and they're like a local boy who just has this love for the club. I just do not see Xavi Simons being like, yeah, bro, I'll sit up for a 44-game season, 48-game season.
I would totally be like...
Plus playoffs, if needed.
Like, if I'm Villa, I'm like...
Yeah.
Totally having you for,
or like, anybody in like any decent team in Serie A, Bundesliga.
Yeah,
like, he could go back to the Bundesliga comfortably, and it would be better than him taking a 50% pay cut.
He's not going
to play in the Championship.
No one has the money. His relegation release clause isn't going to be like peanuts. It's going to be 40 mil. Like, somebody's still going to have to pay it. Like, and to me, that's just like a Premier League team is going to pay that. Like, but that's fine. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, he's going to go. So then the question is, like, what do you do? The other thing is, of course, we're talking here is if you can just sell the guys that you want to sell. And that is the thing that annoys me every year. You have people who talking this way, where it's like, well, you can just sell the guys you want to sell. No, you can't. Teams are going to go for the guys that they want. And I think to some degree, when you're in this situation, you have to put basically everyone on the market, bar a couple of guys, and you have to just say whoever goes, goes, and whoever hasn't gone by this date, like, you're in the squad for the rest of the season.
I think their full first-choice defence goes pretty easily. Van de Ven, Romero, Adogi, Porro. I think they all find homes pretty easily.
And some of them should have gone before. You know, like, they should have sold Romero last year.
Romero and Porro, peak age, or coming into post-peak, Premier League players are fine. Van de Ven is already a top Premier League player, and he's 24. He'll find a home. Adogi's a little bit unknown, but has a seemingly high ceiling. He's just a little bit injury prone at the minute, but he's 23. Like, if you get him for a cut price, there's Premier League teams that take a risk on that.
Okay, I mean, but then the question is, like, you need to bulk this squad out. You've got a bunch of guys who are really, really injury prone. And so if you can, you pick up some of the superior Championship players, right? Because those guys can deliver in the Championship, but maybe translate to the Premier League. The problem is some of those are going to get promoted. So, like, Hayden Hackney, for example, if he didn't get promoted, perfect for you, but he's going.
Yeah.
Like, but someone like Fatawu from Leicester, you know,
he's not getting
promoted. Perfect. Go and get him. He's still super young. There's a really good chance that when he comes up to the Prem, he can grow into a useful player as well. But the one good thing, though, is that Spurs would be shopping in a market where there's not that much competition with their financial clout.
So or there are even their club clout either as well.
Yeah, so there are players that you don't sign when you're competing for Europa League spots, right? But when you're in the Championship trying to get promoted and trying to build a team that could also then finish 10th in the Prem, there are risks that are perfectly reasonable to take. So you go to Liga, you go to La Liga, you go to Serie A. And yeah. So, you know, Alvaro Rodriguez is a guy I would think about. He's 21 years old. He's a striker at Elche. And this season, he's at over three shots a game. Quite a lot of key passes. He's at 0.7 non-penalty expected goals and assists per 90 minutes. Elche are 1 point above the drop mm-hmm. in Spain. He's 21 years old and he's 6'4". He's a guy who might actually turn out to be a really good top flight striker. But more importantly, he won't cost an arm and a leg. He might be convincible to go to the championship because unless another Premier League team comes in for him or one of the big Serie A teams, who else is going to come in for him? Like, Atleti have got their strikers sorted. Real Madrid, I don't think, are going to sign him. Barcelona, I don't think, are going to sign him. I mean, maybe they would, but it doesn't feel very Barcelona. So then you're competing with other Premier League teams. And sure, there might just be another Premier League team who says, yeah, we want this guy. He's 21-year-old potential star. Yeah. But if you go early in the window, super hard, like the season ends and you're like, we're going to close the deal for this guy straight away. Three shots a game in La Liga. Like, you're coming to the championship with us. And you offer a ton of money to get it done. And a ton of money for you is like, a ton of money for him is not a ton of money for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You even could in the championship.
Yeah, you could give him like 70K a week in the championship and he'd be like, holy fuck, this is so much money. So you're in this position where if you can bring in a ton of money in sales and then you can take risks in a way that other teams in the Premier League can't because they're scared of getting relegated, well, you're probably going to get promoted pretty much no matter what you do. And there are players like that out there who I think are more than good enough to contribute to a team getting promoted and then probably might be good enough to help keep you up. But either way, whatever you do, you're looking at an incredibly difficult summer of wheeling and dealing to get guys out of the door and get guys in before the championship season starts, by the way, which it does very, very early.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
And then next season, you've got another really difficult summer where you're like, okay, we've built a squad to dominate the championship. How good is it at Premier League level? You don't know. So if they get relegated, it's truly going to be, I would say, a 4 or 5 year process of getting the squad back to a decent level because it'll be building for the championship, yeah. building to stay up in the Premier League, and then slowly building towards actually being good again. Mm-hmm. And man, that's a rough situation. There's also the question of manager, by the way. Like, who'd be managing them in the championship next season? I don't fucking know who that's going to be.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah. Scary. Scary stuff. So,
Ooh, that's a good question.
So, quite funny, obviously.
yeah.
But truly, if you gave me this job, I'd be like, I'm going to be pulling all-nighters for the next 2 years. Like, this is a nightmare. Yeah. And I do almost feel sorry for Spurs fans.
Behave yourself. No, you don't.
No, I don't really.
You don't.
No. I think it would be really, it would be absolutely hilarious to have a team of this size in the championship.
Yeah.
Like, truly, yeah. I'd be kind of, because the thing is as well, I said before that they could just win every game in the championship. If Spurs right now played the best teams in the championship, would they win? Like, would they just like beat Middlesbrough and beat Coventry? I don't know, man. I'm not sure I really buy it. Like, so maybe it'd be tougher than we expect. And again, like, it is such a long season and you've got such an injury-prone squad. Like, yeah. Everyone will say, oh, no, European competition. Brother, it's 46
it's
games in
the
championship.
Yeah. It's the same as you were playing. Nuts. Plus, then you've got the, like, FA Cups and stuff. Domestic.
And if you don't, get automatic promotion, you've got playoffs.
Yeah. So, like, you're, say, a few games in each domestic competition plus playoffs, you're over 50 games. Like, you're 55 plus games, which is basically a Premier League season plus a good run in the FA Cup and a European tournament run into the knockouts.
Pete.
What?
I've just checked the score.
the Spurs score?
Oh, my God.
Almost 3-0 after 21 minutes.
You know what, as well? What's worse about it is I saw that score and I thought, I'll scroll to the lineup. They must be playing kids. Look at the lineup. The lineup is kind of close to full strength.
Down to Van. Oh, yeah, of course, Van de Ven can play because he's not suspended.
Okay, they're not playing Simons, but he didn't start the other day. He didn't start against Palace.
They've got a front line of Tell, Richarlison, Muani.
So they could, midfield, yeah, okay. So Solanke, yeah. Simons, and Gallagher could be playing in this game.
Gallagher's on the bench. They're all on the bench. Pellini's on the bench.
So it's not like...
That's it.
I guess it's not 100% full strength, but I would call this like 80% full strength, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, this is not a weak... This is one of their best teams that they can put out.
Oh my God, Pete.
And they're 3-0 down after 21 minutes. They also only have 9 subs. Also, Kinski's off. Vicario's on. So Kinski could be injured as well.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, well, doesn't seem like a good situation.
No.
But at least that, on the plus side, it at least means that you just don't take next week seriously. Next week, I would be like, the under-15s are playing Atletico Madrid. Like, I just don't give a shit.
But also, I don't understand, why don't you just not play kids anyway? And just be like, we're going to get fucking battered by Atletico. We're basically going to give them a bye. But we have 9 games left to save our season and to stay in the Premier League. And we have 12 players either injured or unavailable for the next multiple weeks. That's not going to really drastically drop until mid-April at best. Like, these next 4 or 5 games, this is the best squad that we have. Basically, the squad on the pitch at the minute is, like you say, 80% the best squad they have for the next month. And it's all the squad that they have. Yet they're playing midweek, huge game Saturday, midweek, Forest 6-pointer the Saturday after early kickoff. I don't know why you don't just roll over and basically take the bye and be like, you know what, like, staying in the Premier League is so much more valuable than maybe getting to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and then getting relegated to the Championship. It seems crazy. Like, if they get, they might have already got an injury to Kinski. So if they get, say, one more injury across these 2 legs, like, that's huge. That's huge for the next month for them. Like, they've got 8 outfielders on the bench at the minute compared to, I think, Atletico have like 12. Like, they cannot fill the team sheet. They literally cannot fill their allowed team sheet with senior players. They just do not have the numbers.
Pete, it's just like yeah, sure. Like, I mean, I actually can't believe it. Like, it's like... I can't believe that they played such a strong team and they're just getting absolutely pummeled. Oh my God.
It's four.
And oh my God. And Atletico aren't even like...
4-0 after 25 minutes.
That good. okay, well, I guess that's that. Like, I'm really sorry, Spurs fans. Like, I just... Like, as we said at the top, they're still a pretty good chance that they
yeah, I think it's under 20% chance to get relegated, around 20 according to Opta.
Oh God. Okay, yeah, I still think it's not that likely, but that's kind of reckoning without the sort of destiny element of it, you know, where it does start to feel like maybe it's ordained, especially as it's happening in a season where Arsenal at present are still like in in every competition, and I would argue that they have been the best team in every competition they've played, apart from maybe the FA Cup. Like, yeah, it's not a good one. Anyway, moving on to the burn book, I guess. Okay, burn book. What are you taking out of the burn book this week?
And the reason I
ask that is because I've got an out ready to go and I do not have an in.
What I am taking out of the burn book this week is the Six Nations 2026. Are you a rugby fan, Patrick?
I liked playing rugby when I was a kid. It was one of the few sports I was actually good at. But no, I don't watch rugby. I also find rugby in the public space to be tremendously annoying.
The patrons frequenting the public bars,
and I know some supporting posh
the jeans and shoes.
I know
to be
some
fair,
posh
you're in
women.
The banana, so you must get it really bad.
I also know some posh women around here who are literally like, oh my God, like, we would never let our kids play football, rugby maybe. Like, truly, I've had that said to me by a person I thought was normal, and I was like, oh, it's just a class.
Yeah,
thing,
it's the clientele, not the sport.
And I was just, but at least football fans are just like good, honest cunts, you know. Whereas rugby, it's like a legit, you know, landlord died in the wool reform, you know, Clarkson jeans
like and shoes. Jeans and shoes.
Somebody once described, who was it? What music were they talking about? I think they were talking about Muse, and someone's called it Clarkson Jean's Warhammer music. And I was like, that's really harsh on Warhammer people, because I don't think they're anything like Clarkson.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, there's a lot of that. You know, I can only imagine what's going on at the rugby game. You know, where people are just like, oh my God, have you seen that? Have you seen that the Who are going on tour next year? Like, shut the fuck up. It's a like beta blocker sport is what it is.
Right. But
my wife says I'm not allowed to drink full fat milk anymore. What an old my old ball and chain, what an old bitch. Like, it's like that, like that, that's what's going on at the rugby.
Yeah, whereas the football is like, let's do the MDMA and fight each other.
Yeah, the football they're just like, they're just shitheads, they're just hooligans. Yeah. Like, it's just fine. Like, it's just not that big a deal.
It was like when they moved the Old Firm to midday to try and stop the Rangers and Celtic fans arriving too pissed. People just started drinking at 7 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I'm sorry, but you're dealing with Glaswegians here. Yeah. Like, this is not a weak people. The people of Glasgow. People of Glasgow are going to look at your. They're going to set an alarm on their phone, and they're just going to get out there and get fucking hooned. Oh, by the way, Spurs have scored. So
4-1. Jesus Christ. We're 30 minutes in.
Comebacks on.
But yeah, so the Six Nations.
We should have just live streamed this rather than like watching the fucking, like, doing this podcast properly.
Fans aside, the actual tournament this year, well, generally I think it's always good. I love it. But this year it's been particularly special. And there's one game left, all taking place this Saturday. But usually by this stage, there's like one or two teams that can win it. Occasionally there might be a third in the mix, but it's like the likelihood of that happening is truly astronomical. Like, all of the results would need to go their way, and there'd be like multiple upsets in the same day and all of that stuff. Usually by this stage of the tournament, you know that there's one team that's likely to win it, and in the event of an upset, unless the two teams are playing each other, the other team might leapfrog them last minute or whatever, like on the last day. That's usually as dramatic as it gets. The results across the tournament are generally pretty predictable, and you might get one upset, one big upset a year. This year has been crazy because at the minute there are three teams, France, Ireland, Scotland, all within 2 points of each other, and Ireland and Scotland play each other on the last day, and France play England. Because, okay, so you would say like France are strong and they beat Ireland comfortably. Ireland are strong but very injured, but they beat England very comfortably. England were meant to be decent and coming like back to being good again, but they got beaten by Ireland and then they got beaten by Scotland. Scotland, or the other way around, Scotland are way better than they used to be, but not a big team yet. But they just went and beat France and England. But then they went and lost to Italy, who are no longer the whipping boys, but are a very average team. And then there's Wales, who's getting pumped by everybody. So there's like four different kind of upsets there already in this one tournament, meaning that the three teams separated by 2 points going into the last day. I don't remember a tighter tournament. Bearing in mind, in rugby, you get 4 points for a win, 5 points for a bonus point win, and you can also get a bonus point loss. So going into this last round of games on Super Saturday, literally three teams can fully comfortably win. Ireland, Scotland play each other, and then England play France. England are still a decent team, so France could comfortably lose that. France are most likely to win, but it wouldn't be outrageous for any one of those three teams to win. Whereas in other years, generally, this team's probably going to win. This other team might win if everything goes in their favour on that day. This third team can technically, mathematically, maybe still win, but that would be like so outrageous. Whereas this is just straight up like a three-way shootout. Two of the teams are playing each other. Like if France were playing Wales, for example, the tournament would be over because Wales are absolutely garbage. France would roll them over, win with 5 points, and their points tally would be huge, and nobody would be able to have more points than them if they win with a bonus point. They can get the same amount of points as them, but because they're going to pump Wales, they would theoretically pump Wales.
Is this the worst England have been for...
So England have 6 points. England are second bottom.
Pretty funny.
Only Wales are below England.
Yeah, because didn't they lose to Italy for like literally the first time?
They lost Italy for the first time in six... So Italy used to be the whipping boys. Italy used to finish the absolute bottom. That's currently Wales. But yeah, they got beaten by Italy. They got beaten by Scotland. They got pumped by Ireland. And now they play France. But the thing is, like, it would be a very English thing to go and beat France.
Sure.
And it's totally feasible because they're not a truly terrible team. There's just a weird system and kind of like they're just a whole hodgepodge of a team. But everything's so finely balanced. It all happens on one day. Not at the same time as well. So it's like a 2 p.m., 4 p.m., 5 p.m., 8 p.m. thing. So it starts with Ireland, Scotland, and ends with England, France, I think. So whole day of a really finely balanced tournament. And do you know what we have that morning? Not do you know what we have that afternoon? Right in the middle of the Ireland game. Actually, not even right in the middle. The Ireland game is right in the middle of this activity.
No.
A child's birthday party.
Oh.
At some children's cafe thing. No TVs. No, like, pints or booze or anything.
Okay.
Right for the entirety of the Ireland game. So, I'm putting it out there now. Jess will be soloing that day.
Yeah.
And
you've got one kid.
Instead of making an appearance, I'll be making an excuse.
Yeah, that's fine.
I do kind of feel bad because I came to Bonnie's birthday.
But, sorry, so are you just taking the rugby out of the burn book? Or is this a dual entryway or like scheduling children's parties?
No.
For the same time as major sporting events in the burn book.
That would be an in, surely.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can do both in one.
I've got an in as well.
Okay.
But I'm taking out this specific year of Six Nations.
Okay.
Because it's been just kind of crazy.
Okay. I think sure, you know, that's fine. Whatever. I can't really sanction this jeans and shoe buffoonery, but like, it's fine. What am I taking out of the burn book? Oh, taking social media off your phone. So recently I've just been in this zone where I'm like, I don't give a fuck about any of the social media I'm on. I kind of have to be on Twitter and Blue Sky for work. And sometimes I just feel like digging someone out for no reason. You know, I do have to sort of have those accounts. And I like Instagram every now and then. It's fun to get inspiration for clothes I want to buy, basically. But some weeks I just go through. I'm not really terrible for this. There, like most people I know, I think, in fact, are worse. But some weeks I'm just like, I'm opening my phone automatically all the time.
Yeah.
I'm opening my phone.
Muscle memory kind of thing.
I've got a few minutes. The only thing I've got on me is my phone. So I open my phone. And what can you do when you open your phone? You've only got a couple of apps. You're not just going to Google something to entertain yourself. So you open Instagram or you open Twitter or something. And after a while, I just think, what is this doing for me that I scroll through all the nothing bullshit that people have said? 90% of it is American politics, which I do not give a fuck about. It's bad enough that we have to be affected by it in any way. I don't want to read about it as well. Mm. It's incessant. And I just think I need to break that habit. And I've now reached the point that I would actually rather sit and do nothing. I'd rather sit in boredom with my own thoughts than open those apps reflexively. It's okay to open them intentionally once in a while, but just open them automatically because that's what my thumb does when I'm bored. I think that's bad for me. And I do think as well, I know this has been said in multiple places, so this is not new thinking, but I do think as well that creativity flourishes when you're bored. If you're never bored, you never really have time to think. You never really have time to come up with novel solutions to problems you're facing or think about some project that you're interested in or just have deeper thoughts about your life in general because you are filling that empty space with whatever appears on Instagram. And as a result, I think that we're all impoverished. You know, like we don't really have complicated thoughts about our lives. Some of us who might, well, you know, have creative possibilities inside us. I wonder how many novels and things we've lost because people were just scrolling fucking Instagram.
Just liking and thirst traps?
Yeah, exactly. Just on Instagram, it was like, oh, I love, look at those, look at the cum gutters on this guy. But it's true, And you do notice your attention span dwindling as well. You know, now I can watch a film and it's not a problem. But I remember a few years ago when I'd got out of the habit of watching films regularly, almost having to train myself to sit through a two-hour film again. And sometimes it is a chore and sometimes that's not on you. Sometimes it's the film's fault. And I have weird things that go on when I read. I've always had that, though, since I was a kid. I go back a lot and I jump around and my attention is very diffuse with that. So I just think that that's just something about how I read. But the more you do it, the better you are at it. And the more I'm on Instagram and Twitter and Blue Sky, the the more I find myself having to wrestle my focus back to the thing that I'm doing. And when you do jobs like this, you know, podcasting or seeing therapy clients or just sitting with your children, feeling your focus being dragged away all the time, feeling your thumb kind of itching to open your phone, even though you know the thing on your phone is boring, yeah. You know that you're going to be bored if you open Instagram. It's just gradually kind of siphoning off bits of our humanity. So last week when I was away in the hotel, I did delete those apps. I don't have Twitter on my phone anyway anymore. So I go to it in Safari.
Yeah.
So that I actually have to
be quite deliberate about it, yeah.
But I deleted Instagram. And, you know, when I say I went to Blue Sky or went to Twitter, like during a football match, I mean, I actually went to it on my browser.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I don't know. I think that we should all be trying to do this once in a while.
Have you seen that the companies like Netflix are telling scriptwriters to really deliberately explain their plot multiple times verbally?
I did see that.
In their shows and films, because they know that their audience will be on their phone not paying attention, so they need
to
listen to
it. Yeah, Matt Damon said this, right?
Oh, that's who it was. Yeah. Second screen or something, like second screen narrative that they can explain. They don't have to fully watch the show or the film. But they can be spoon-fed and reminded and handheld along the narrative without having to like break their gaze from Instagram or TikTok or whatever. Pretty depressing.
Pretty depressing. By the way, I just had a quick look back at the Spurs game and I saw Mickey van der Ven not get red carded for one of the most blatant red card challenges I've ever seen. He went into somebody's leg with his studs up at, I would say, roughly 200 miles an hour. It was so aggressive.
Didn't get picked up by VAR.
I think he's just got a mercy call.
Yeah.
I think they were like, he's already dead. Like, what are we going to do?
They're already dead, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, what are you putting in the burn book this week?
So mine's kind of similar to yours. So what I'm putting in the burn book this week is LinkedIn. I'm done with it. I think it's over. I think we should just delete it, but not just delete it off our phones, delete it entirely. I was fine with it for a while. It's
good
wanky,
choice.
but it served a purpose. It's basically, the concept of it is, it makes sense, like a database for everybody's CVs where you can see job openings, headhunters can find you easily. That all makes sense. But like all platforms with a social function, over time, people just ruin it with their personality and the kind of like misplaced belief that people actually care about what they have to say and think. And it happened to Facebook. It happened to Twitter. All of those things are now dead. Or varying degrees of dying. Happened to Instagram, but Instagram kind of clawed it back a little bit from the edge of the cliff. There was a point maybe 10 years ago, 7 years ago, where everything you saw on Instagram was like this fake influencer style version of life. Even from your friends and stuff, even from like no, like just random people in your life, they would all be this like influencer type snapshot. All authenticity had completely gone from the platform and everybody was like, this is kind of weird now. They've kind of clawed that back a little bit, but it happens with all these social platforms. Like they evolve and mutate into some just completely horrible, unusable, unenjoyable platform that eventually people just stop using.
Yeah.
And with LinkedIn, I feel it's basically there. Like we now have LinkedIn influencers. This is where we tipped. We have LinkedIn influencers. We have people tracking and growing their LinkedIn followers.
Yeah, like your man. What's that guy you told me about on a previous episode?
Oh, Davis Clark?
Yeah.
So I think he's less LinkedIn. He's more just like, he's just shareholder value, bro.
He's a success win, bro.
He's like, he put up these videos and people are like facetiously enjoying them.
But he is...
Like he thinks people are laughing with him, but they're actually laughing at him. It's one of those scenarios.
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay.
And also he just, it's funny that he happens to be terrible at his job and keeps getting demoted. But like, spirits stay high. But with LinkedIn, like people, the whole concept of building a following on LinkedIn to me is it just shows that it's gone too far. I'm just seeing it more and more, like loads of these like self-aggrandizing bullshit posts that I'll honestly have like little to no substance at all. I see it a lot in the digital media space. I see it tons because you get these like strategy bros who write like an 1,000-word post on LinkedIn about how like him or like they and their team made this video that they all knew was a good video, but when they put it up on YouTube, it didn't perform well. So they got their collective 3 brain cells and rubbed them together and came up with the idea that they would change the title and the thumbnail. and they did that, and then the video performed better. But they're selling this like this fucking snake oil bullshit. They're selling this like it's something, it's like a substantial feat of engineering and thought process. It's actually okay. Just common sense. It's literally just common sense. We made a good video, but it's not performing well. What can we do to maybe change the trajectory of that? Okay, yeah, we can change the title and the packaging of it. Mm. Oh, that worked. Great. 1,000 words on digital strategy and understanding your audience and all of that. If you understood your audience, you wouldn't have that need to fucking repackage in the first place. But I see these all the time. And to the extent where like you're kind of wading through them to see anything of note on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And that has then subsequently developed into these people thinking that people actually care about them on a personal level, on the platform. LinkedIn's a purely professional platform, or it should be. And I'm now seeing like literal baby announcements on LinkedIn. What? Like people saying like, and okay, the own, I think this is crazy regardless, but
gotta explain this gap on my CV. The wife just had a fucking baby, and so I'll be off work for 1 week.
No,
see you next week, lads.
It's not even defensible in that way, because at least that kind of makes sense. You could put a baby post up and say, I've had a baby. By the way, I'm just going to disappear from this platform professionally for like 4 months because I work freelance and I have the like flexibility to do that or whatever. Mm. If you're wondering where I am, I'm spending time with my new child. I could make my peace with that. This was just like a Facebook post, Facebook style post being like, welcome to the world. Insert person's name here, picture of the baby, picture of this person with the baby.
They should add them to their company as an employee. Yeah. At least they should be like, welcome to the brand new colleague joining us today. We've onboarded.
Got a new starter, yeah.
We've onboarded this fucking baby.
I honestly feel we're basically at a point where I'm about to see a post where it's like, here's what watching my wife have a baby taught me about B2B marketing. I honestly think
post exists, surely. It can't not.
But therein lies the problem. Like the platform's gone too far. It is being, it's not a social platform. It is not a personal platform. Nobody gives a fuck about your life. Don't build your following on Instagram. I think on LinkedIn. I think it's nonsense. Because it's seemingly the people who are able to build followings have virtually nothing to teach people. They have zero substance to pass down to their however many thousand followers. Mm. People are there. Upload your CVs and your career trajectories. Let recruiters find you so you can get new job opportunities or find a new job if you want a new job. That is LinkedIn in a nutshell. That's all it should be. That's all it ever should be. We've gone way too far. We've tipped.
No, I agree, man. I don't think LinkedIn should exist at all. I think we used to have LinkedIn and it was called Your CV. And you emailed it to people and you lied on it. And that was what it was for. Nobody could check it except the person in front of you. And that was perfect.
Mm.
Because it meant that you could lie as much as you wanted to. And if they caught you, that was on you.
Yeah.
But if you got away with it, that was also on you. Congratulations. You know, whereas now it's like every prick I've ever met in my life has to look at my CV and I have to update it every now and then. I'm so glad. I said this to Emma actually once. I was like, I never need to be on LinkedIn again. You know? I do this stuff freelance, basically. I mean, I don't. I'm an employee with Ted. But I do. But I'm essentially, you know, freelance. And then my therapy thing, I don't have a boss. I don't report to anybody. There's absolutely no reason for me to put it on LinkedIn because no one will care. It's just like, what, private therapist at private therapy. That's all it would say. It'd be completely useless.
Private therapist at self-employed.
Yeah. You know, my father-in-law is actually kind of a LinkedIn influencer.
Yeah?
Well, he's not. He doesn't do influencer shit. He's just got big clout on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Like, people on LinkedIn go fucking berserk for him.
Interesting.
But he does a lot of kind of, like, management training and runs workshops and mentors lots of people.
Something
and
to
stuff,
teach.
So,
something to say. Something of note to contribute to society.
But when he announced his retirement, it was like when I said that I was leaving Football Daily. Seriously, he got like thousands and thousands of people replying to him on LinkedIn being
Christ.
Like, being like, you're the fucking man. Thanks for, you know, giving me my career. And he was like, yeah, sure.
It's like fucking, like, it's like Jordan Belfort leaving whatever the fucking company he founded.
Yeah, what was the name of that company?
Something with W, was it? like Widesmith Capital or something?
I actually don't care. I'm just stalling for time because I don't have anything to put in the burn book. what am I going to put in the burn book? I find that having a child in school...
It was Strat Notebook.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot like being in school yourself. It's annoying.
Having a child in school is a lot like being in school yourself.
Yeah. So you spend all... Okay. So your child... They will take their cardigan off at school or their school jumper. They will leave it lying around. You then have to be in charge of sorting this out. You cannot post about it in the group chat, which, by the way, Emma started for all the parents in our year, because it got taken over by school reps who are parents who are the biggest fucking dweebs who kind of became prefects, basically. So they kind of run the group.
What?
And they essentially provide the group. They said at a certain point, we're going to now use this group to give information from the school to all the parents. And then they started telling people off who said, you know, my kids lost their school jumper. Has anybody seen it? Have any of your kids come home with two jumpers? Like that kind of thing. They were then like, this actually isn't what this group is for. And so when Coco loses her jumper, which she does a lot, I go and post in that group on purpose.
Yeah,
saying,
out of spite.
And I said to Emma, I was like, I'm waiting for the day someone tells me off, because I will send the shrug emoji or the two fingers up emoji or I'll do my preferred one, which is the kind of raised fist with the arrow going in two directions so as to indicate a wanking gesture. I put those side by side. Like, it's just like, I don't care. But then also, you know, they get sent home with homework. They say in term one, there won't be homework. There's homework. And so this is for you to help your child learn to read, but you have to do the reading with them and you have to fill out a record of the reading that you did with them and how it went and any difficult words. By the way, your child does not want to do reading when they come home from school. They come home from school, they're exhausted. Mm. You then have to force them to sit down with you and practice their reading when they've spent all day at school doing this shit. And if you don't do it, then the teacher will be like, have you been practicing the reading enough? And you're like, I've been reading to my child for nearly 5 years now.
Yeah.
I haven't done the reading that you asked me to do because I don't want to. Because I just want my child to love me and she will learn to read. I don't want to fight her in the afternoon every single day so that she'll do this reading when she's objectively tired as well. So there's just a load of this stuff where I'm like, it's just whining. It's just constant whining about stuff. And then like constant, Cole, can you volunteer to help take the children on a nature walk today? Can you volunteer to stand in the buggy park for the parents who've got more than one child in school? Like all this kind of stuff. They're constantly asking people to volunteer. And if not enough people volunteer, they're like, yeah, well, we're not going to do the nature walk now. It's just like, why don't you have a plan for that? Why does this school run on volunteer power? You're a fucking government funded institution. Just sort it out yourselves. It's fucking annoying. Like, I've been to school once. I don't feel like getting told off all the time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my child doesn't listen to you. And oh, that's the other thing. They say they will talk to you about stuff as if it's only just being suggested to you that you should care. So I like our kids teacher. She's nice. She's like 25. You know, we've talked about her on here before.
I think we've talked about her offline before.
Okay, well, anyway, yeah. She's...
She's Northern Irish.
She's Northern Irish. Yeah, she's nice. She is nice. I like her. But sometimes she'll be like, so Coco's not really listening at the moment. You know, today, she said to us the other week, she was like, I spoke to her and then two other teachers spoke to her because she would not come in from the playground. She was just running around. She wouldn't stop running around. She wouldn't come in. When we asked her to help tidy up later on when everybody else was doing it, she just folded her arms and said no. And she went through like six different instances of Coco not listening.
Yeah.
And then it's like, could you talk to her about that at home? And I'm like, what the fuck do you think I've been doing for 4 years? do you think that I want her not to listen? I don't understand it. I was just like, yeah, I mean, we can. But do you think that she doesn't listen because it's never occurred to us before to talk to her about listening?
Yeah.
If I could just make her listen, I'd fucking do it. But she doesn't want to. And you actually can't force her to listen.
Yeah, she has free will.
Without scaring her. And yeah. I don't want to scare her. Like, so there's stuff like this where they talk to you in this way, in this like patronizing way all the time, because they're teachers. And teachers talk to everybody like teachers. Where I just... Parenting is always this thing where you're constantly fighting against the feeling that you're not doing it well enough. And when your child goes to school, you meet people quite often who tell you you're not doing well enough. yeah. And I just can't be arsed with it. Fuck off. It's like when you go to the dentist. Emma takes Coco to the dentist and the dentist says to her, you know when they ask you a question but it's a statement? She says, and of course you don't give her chocolate, do you? And, Emma always, because she likes to succeed, because she's a good girl, she's like, no, of course not. And just lies because she's like, I don't care. Like, just get me out of there. I'll tell a lie. She'll be happy. We'll just leave. And I was just like, fuck off. Like, of course I give my child chocolate. Yeah. Like, my child, I want my child to enjoy her time on earth. The aim of my life is not that Coco reaches the grave with the best set of teeth possible. It's that she enjoys her life.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if she gets a filling. It's not that big a fucking deal. It's not the Middle Ages. She's not going to die from it. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, there's just all this nonsense that that goes around all the time. So I would say that having a child in school is just a constant stream of jobs you have to do, tasks that you haven't done, volunteering that you get asked to do, degradations daily.
And gaslighting.
Gaslighting, just fucking being patronized. Don't like it. Don't do it. Just don't send your kid to school. I mean, obviously, don't homeschool your child because they're looking
weird.
Yeah, you can't homeschool a child. I'm sorry. It's just not allowed. But prepare yourself is what you can do. I think that's it. I think that's an episode. We're going to get out of here. We'll catch a bunch of you over on Patreon. Thank you for those of you sending questions. We're going to be answering a ton of those as well. Good luck to Spurs in all your future endeavors. I'll post that on LinkedIn. And we'll see a bunch of you later. Bye.